we have a session on management commentary. I was going to say goodwill impairment, deja vu, but we'll talk about that later. So, management commentary, and I'll hand straight over. So we've got an hour on this, and I'll hand it straight over to Mary Claire and Matt.
Yes. Right.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I think I know you all, but just in case, Matt Chapman. Mary Claire has joined the management commentary project team recently.
2 months now.
So as she's been getting up to speed, I thought it'd be a good idea if she gave you a quick summary of where we are to start with.
Yes. So we're currently on stream one of the project, and which has been dealing with the objective of management commentary, the application of materiality and the principles preparing management commentary. We've had a discussion with the consultative group on the 28th of September, and we're hoping to discuss those matters with you today as well and get your views. And we're also preparing a board paper on the objective for the board in November, and the other elements of the stream then will be discussed in subsequent meetings. And just a reminder that the scope of this project remains within financial reporting, and the users of management commentary are the primary users, the same as for financial statements and as defined in the conceptual framework.
Yes, so we're still at the stage where I think we have to explain that every time we present on management commentary, but we'll get there in the end. So I think when we met last time, we asked you to think in the context of management commentary about what you saw the main issues you wanted us to focus on. And I think we had two groups then, and both groups picked medium-term operational performance, long-term operational performance, and business strategy. So I think that was quite a clear message, and I hope that a lot of those aspects will start to come through in the work we're doing on objectives and principles for the management commentary, but then you'll also see them in more substantively when we start doing our work on the content elements of the management commentary. So just to be clear, at this stage we're trying to set the overriding objective of the management commentary and the principles on which it would be prepared. At a later stage in the project, we will cover specific elements of detail. So that might be explaining current year financial performance, it might be describing the business model, describing the strategy, providing operational performance measures. So all of that detail is to come in the project. So at this stage, we're at the high level. And really, one of the sort of key themes we've had as we've been working on the objectives and principles is we're very conscious that the management commentary needs to be principles-based if it is to provide information that is relevant to the specific circumstances of the business. So we can't simply prescribe a set of disclosures. But equally, we're also very conscious that one of the challenges with management commentary practice and the implementation of other similar projects has been in enabling preparers, giving preparers enough rigour so that they meet the needs of the users from the management commentary. So what we've been trying to do with objectives and principles is blend that balance and maintain that balance of rigour and principles. So we've got three sets of questions for you this afternoon. The first is around objectives for the management commentary. The second is around materiality in the context of the management commentary. And then the third picks up other principles. So I'll start with a brief discussion of objectives. And then perhaps I'll ask you for some of your views there. So when we approach the area of objectives for the management commentary, one of the things in our mind was the question of whether preparers at the moment, whether practice indicates that preparers really understand what it is they are aiming to achieve with a management commentary or equivalent, whether that's an MD&A or a strategic report. What we've sought to do is provide what we think is a simple test of success for a management commentary, and then back it up with a little bit of guidance. And really the aim is to provide, almost on a page of the practice statement, a summary of what the management commentary is, what it does, what it covers. We'll be looking for your views on whether you think we're heading in the right direction on that. In terms of the headline objective, I'd highlight three features for that. The first is providing context for the financial statements. What do we mean by that? Well, enabling readers of the financial statements to form a view as to how those financial statements might develop over time. So you've got the financial statements themselves, but you obviously need to understand how they're going to develop. So that's our overarching focus, and that was the focus in the original practice statement. However, we're trying to make that a bit clearer in terms of what that means in practice. So we're emphasising that the information in the management commentary needs to support a user's assessment of the future cash flows of the entity and management stewardship of the entity's economic resources. So we're looking to make that aspect explicit, and we're also looking to retain the feature that of the original practice statement was, which was that it should be prepared through the eyes of management. So this is placing the onus on management to identify the things that it considers relevant and provide the information that it considers relevant to forming an assessment of those future cash flows. So we're not asking management to provide its own view of what those future cash flows might be, but we're asking management to give you the information that you need as a user to form that assessment for yourselves. We discussed this with our consultative group around a month ago. Two things that came out of that quite strongly that we would also appreciate your views on was, firstly, the consultative group wanted to see a strong link between the objective of a management commentary and the purpose of the entity. So this is the entity's overall mission, what it's seeking to achieve. So that would give, I think that is quite helpful in terms of providing a strategic context for the information that would go into the management commentary. And the second feature that came out quite strongly was there was a feeling that we needed an explicit reference to the long term in the practice statement. Now, we had held off in the papers we took to the consultative group, we'd held off from putting that in originally for two reasons. One is that if you start defining long-term, then you end up with a raft of questions over how long is short-term, how long is medium-term, how long is long-term. What we're actually seeking to achieve is information that addresses the whole life of the cash flows of the entity going into perpetuity. So it's, I think when the consultative group raised that point, we're really, it wasn't a question of wanting a different intent, it was a question of how you express that intent, what is likely to be the most effective way that preparers will understand in applying the practice statement. And specifically, we're aware that some frameworks, those related to integrated reporting, use language like value creation. And to us who are sort of quite immersed in the topic, that's language that works very well, but we were concerned that value creation to people who aren't immersed in how a management commentary works might translate into something that is less concrete than we would like. So the approach that we're suggesting at the moment is one that focuses on future cash flows, but does add the additional emphasis to make it explicit that that includes cash flows going into the long term, but doesn't use terminology like value creation because we feel that's likely to confuse people.
So can I ask, you do mention business model on the bullets. is business model, would that also be eligible for inclusion because is there a direct link between line items in the financial statement and business model?
Absolutely. And jumping ahead to the supporting guidance that we put in the pack for you on page 25, we identify features in there that are address what we think are short, medium, and long-term factors. And the long-term factors covers the relationships that affect the entity's ongoing success and the impact of the entity's activities on those relationships. So we're seeking to pull that aspect of the business model that affects long-term success and potentially can be quite fragile in places in terms of supporting long-term success. So we're seeking to bring it in that way, but we've gone away from using specific value creation language.
And instead of relationships, is it like synonymous to stakeholders, or is it something totally different?
So I think be careful with stakeholders because that language is used in a number of different ways, sometimes to imply ownership of the business. What we're talking about here are those people that the business needs to have a relationship with in order to support its ongoing success. So in the very short term, that's your customer base, your employees. But looking long term, that would encompass wider relationship with society as a whole, license to operate type questions. So on page 25, what we were sort of seeking to address really is two problems. One is cases where you might get the right information, but it's on the wrong issue. So we're seeking to provide guidance that helps business identify the relevant matters, what's important to its future success, to provide information on. And that does, as we were saying earlier, that does cover short, medium, long term. And then the second aspect to that is the risk that you get the wrong information on the right issue. So the business identifies an issue that is important to investors, but it doesn't provide the right information to enable them, you as a group, to do something with that issue. So we recognise that in the detail of the management commentary, we've got a set of content elements. It would be things like risk, strategy, business model, performance. But we think it's quite hard for preparers to relate what's in those detailed content elements to the overall strategy of the business. So what we're trying to do in the guidance to the objectives is to say the information you need to provide would help a user assess the strategy of the business, the progress in implementing that strategy, and to assess the implications of that progress for its future prospects. So we are sort of coming at the problem from two perspectives, a business up perspective, what's important to the business, and a user down perspective, what's the information that you need. So we've set out three questions for you there, which I think Mary Claire will take you through.
Yeah, and I guess before we move on to the questions, it's worth keeping in mind that one of the concerns brought up by the consultative group was that there is a concern that wording on cash flows could potentially create some confusion on an expectation on forecast. So we're being very careful with the wording we use and the practice statement, and it would be good to have your views on that as well. So in terms of the first question, should the practice statement explicitly include a reference to assessments of prospects for future net cash inflows and also management stewardship of the entity's economic resources?
So I wonder whether we take, in this section, take the three questions, because we may run out of time. So if you want to carry on, and then we'll take the responses.
And then the following question is around whether this reference to cash flows is sufficiently addressing the notion of whole life cash flows and value creation, or do we need to include an explicit reference to long-term horizons? And also, then, do you agree with the content set out on page 25, which Matt was referring to earlier, or is there anything else that we should be including?
Okay, so we'll start with Mitch.
A few things come to mind. One would be, in the sense of, in making those kind of statements that you put in section 25. I mean, if those kind of statements are required, then what good are they in a way? I mean, everyone's going to make a statement like that. I mean, who wouldn't? Maybe I misunderstand it, but
should I clarify that? So we're asking here for the preparer of the management commentary to provide information that is that supports a user's assessment of the business's strategy, for example. So we're not asking them to make a statement that it's
the stewardship statements and.
So it's not a statement. It's provide information that helps a user assess management stewardship.
Okay. Okay. Let me come back to me then.
Okay. Marietta?
So I think, first of all, I really want to applaud you for doing this project, because I think it is very, very important to have management commentary that is really within the specifics of the financial statement and really relevant to investors, because it's very one of the difficulties I face is that a lot of management commentary is very all-encompassing and a lot of sort of like generalized messages about everything that they're doing for society. And it can be quite tricky for an analyst to actually like really filter out all of the information. So I think in that sense, this is a very, very good project. And I want to absolutely make sure that management can't sort of like, you know, hijack that to, you know, just waffle on about the future and, you know, create a link to a lot of the purposes of the entity that are sort of like not really linked to the business model, because I think everybody feels pressure to constantly reiterate that they're not just there to make the shareholders rich and so forth. So I think the narrower the scope, the better. And I actually, what I would like to see is really something that explains the past extremely well and also gives factual information that is relevant to future forecasts. Because I think I completely agree with you that we need to be very careful that we don't just give management a platform to talk about, you know, what they're hoping to achieve over various horizons without any sort of factual basis, and they might be right or wrong. I think whenever I look at the past, you know, I can really, you know, if that's really where, you know, I get statements to hang my hat on, is where I can really challenge management and I try to understand myself, well, you know, if things haven't worked in the past, you know, do I think that realistically something has changed to make them work in the future? And the other thing that I think where disclosures are very, very poor at the moment, and it's always been considered outside of the remit of IFRS, but this might bring it into the remit, is to actually have factual information that helps you with the future forecasting. So things like, you know, I don't know, expirations of specific contracts or patents or order book information, things like that, that you would really want to know for forecasting, that they would, that their own internal people would use for forecasting purposes. And I think that's much better information than any sort of like projections by management for the longer term. I also liked somewhere in your objectives, you said basically that the commentary by management needs to stack up. And I think that's really an issue, especially for negative commentary at the moment. You know, they're trying to gloss over it. They give you one or two reasons why they failed. And when you drill into it a little bit, you know, they have to admit that this explains maybe 10% of the problem. And then they're like, well, you know, this was just an example. And then they start contradicting themselves as to what really caused the problems. So I think in that sense, that's very, very helpful to have something that stacks up. And finally, I do have some comments on materiality, but I guess we'll get to that later on, right?
Okay. Yeah. Could I just pick up in that context then? It's possibly not in the draft wording we shared with you here, but it's absolutely the case that what we're seeking to get management to provide here is historical information that it may be financial, it may be operational. It's that factual information plus management's interpretation, and then that is handed over to you as the investor to consider what does that mean in terms of future cash flows. So that's the first point. And then briefly, second point, you mentioned about sort of management sort of waffling too broadly. One of the things that we're trying to be very pragmatic on is language such as purpose, which sometimes is an invitation to waffle. When we come to it as a content element, we'll try and structure it in a way that stops the waffle. But equally, purpose is tremendously helpful in terms of setting a context for the long-term objectives of what the entity is trying to achieve, so it does have value. So we are trying to sort of draw a balance here, I think.
I think what I was trying to say in that context as well is I think the link should be sort of, you know, financials or what happened in the past, business model, and then maybe a very broad link to broader purpose. But sort of I think, you know, what financial analysts really want to see is the link to the business model. How are you proposing to make your money and how are you really making your money and is that panning out? And then sort of like, you know, wider purposes in terms of, I don't know, creating employment or helping patients live longer and live better and so forth. I think that a lot of that is sort of we can take it for granted. So, you know, it's very clear. So we don't need a constant specific reference to that.
Yeah, noted.
Thanks. So just a few comments from me with regard to the specific questions you've asked. So I think you explained very well why you're proposing to include these wordings on future net cash flows and management stewardship, and I think there is a case for that. So I'm kind of agreeing with that. With regard to kind of the third question, is should there be anything else you include? I think Mariette has touched on it a little bit already in terms of the scope for management commentary is to be a little bit too rosy, a bit too positive. And I appreciate that, you know, that the conceptual framework probably does talk about kind of a fair and balanced, et cetera. And I just wonder whether we need to be more explicit here in the management commentary itself to say it needs to be fair, balanced, understandable, not biased, et cetera. I think that would be quite helpful to kind of perhaps start to address this problem of
set it out.
We will be covering that in neutrality as well later on as a principle, but it might be worth considering if we should include it in objective. Yeah.
So. Okay. Martijn?
Yeah. I really like the focus on the long term and also that you're saying, okay, what's the progress being made towards the long term goals? That's all. And I'd like to echo Marietta's comments that that the request for long information about a long-term perspective is not because we don't need information about what's been happening. We still need that. And one particular topic, and a Dutch company last week won the prize for the best annual report for that, is, for example, a specific paragraph on what still went wrong. And we really like to see management be realistic about things that were messed up.
Yes.
And it's somehow how they treat their blow-ups, and that's that's actually laudable, and it's I think it deserves specific attention for a look back. And when you describe the external environment, I just see your trends in the external environment. I think this is an opportunity to beef that up as well. I mean, Porter is maybe 40 years old, but everything he said about the competitive environment, the rivalry, I mean, it's still as valid today as it ever was. And it's what is the competition, what is the operating environment of the company? And we see like probably sometimes up to 30-40% of companies already doing quite a good job about that, giving indications of market shares.
Yeah.
Not that we want to recount it, but to have a basic idea, where does the company think it's standing? And that is at a level that's no way, it should be no way competitive sensitive information. Those if it's a professional companies, then the competitor knows the position of the of their competitors as well. I mean, we're trying just make it easy for us to understand the business. That should be the purpose of, and not to shoot in the foot. Yeah.
So just on that one, we'll sort of come back in more detail, and we anticipate a content element on external trends and factors that would put more structure about that. I think the one question we do sometimes get asked is, should that explicitly cover systemic external trends and factors as well? And I think that's something that is potentially relevant here.
Well, I can comment. I think it should be company specific. So whatever you say about an external trend, you can say, okay, well, maybe there's like a Brexit or something. No, I'm not interested in. I'm interested in what consequences there are for the company. And so as long as there's a direct link towards with the specific company, then it becomes relevant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so we've got quite a few speakers, so can I go to Paul next, then Goro?
So just briefly on one, to agree with Osman and sort of agree with where you've got to on question one. Question two, I sort of understand the hesitancy about long term, but actually I've got a bit of hesitancy about whole life.
Yeah.
Because companies and their management sort of assume that they will endure forever. That's sort of the mindset. That is rarely the case, as we all very well know, but that is the thinking. And if you're talking about whole life, you are assuming that people know what the end of life is, and absolutely none of us do know that. So I just wonder whether that's the right terminology. I wonder whether something like enduring cash flows,
yes,
might be a better sort of language to use, because you know that's about the continuity from year to year and going forward. And that links to my sort of point on question three as well, because I think that what you've laid out on slide 25 is good as far as it goes and very strong, but I would add an E at the end of it, because I think risks are one thing, but I always encourage companies to be explicit about what the assumptions are. What's the frame that they've placed around their understanding of what the future will be to enable them to be confident that the cash flows will endure? And being and the language I'm trying to get people to use is, what are the dependencies? What are the contingencies? You know, what have they built into their assumptions, almost without being aware of it, that makes them think that the company will persist? And actually pushing people to be a bit more explicit about those will help them think about whether they're real or not, and will certainly help us as investors think about whether they're real.
Okay, I understand that. We'll have a think about that. I see it seems very relevant.
Thanks, Paul. Goro?
Okay. Thank you. First of all, that this project is very important from the Japanese perspective, as we are discussing about exactly that how we can include that information contents on that this type of information to support that the understanding of a financial statement in Japan, particularly in the statutory disclosure package. I want to clarify, first of all, this, you know, practice statement is applicable not only statutory, but also that the voluntary disclosure. In Japan, you know, this type of information tend to be provided by the voluntary disclosure package rather than statutory. Although statutory disclosure requires this type of information, but company tend to provide very, very boilerplate information. And secondly, that the number one, you are talking about that the assessment of prospects of the future net cash flow and stewardship. And the management commentary includes that the information like that the management discussion and analysis, and that stewardship means that the management's own assessment of their, you know, financial performance, assessment and the analysis of the performance of the past fiscal year, or you know that this stewardship means that the kind of story could include story or the management view on the future performance. I want to clarify that.
Okay, well, let me answer that one then. So when we talk about stewardship here, we're talking about information that is relevant to assessing management stewardship of the entity's economic resources, and its stewardship of those economic resources to support the future cash flows of the entity. So it's very much an investor-focused concept. It's not asking management to mark their own homework, if you like, to judge how well they've done. It's asking management to say if there's a piece of information that is relevant to understanding how the business has been managed over the period, then that information belongs in the management commentary. So if I just pick up on your other question around scope and boilerplate, you're absolutely right. The management commentary appears in different forms in different jurisdictions, sometimes as part of a annual report package and sometimes not. That's one of the reasons why it would be very difficult for us to mandate this as a practice statement rather than its voluntary status. So it needs to be down to local regulation, I think, as to how the practice statement gets used. You're right, a lot of disclosures are made outside of the envelope of the formal corporate reporting mechanism, so through investor presentations, for example. One of the things that we mention later on is this idea that if you're disclosing information through an investor presentation, then it probably belongs in your formal annual reporting package as well. So that's one of the ways that we can say, well, if you haven't got that information in there, then your report is not complete. What's the value of that? Well, the formal reporting package, which we hope would include the management commentary, would have been through potentially a different level of due diligence than, say, an investor presentation. So that's why we see value in bringing that information in.
Okay, thank you. And last one on this subtopic. My apologies. So, Paolo, we go to you and then to Mark.
Yeah, first of all, love to be wrong in relation to what I'm saying, but I had a feeling that some of the comments, mainly Marietta's, that looks like you're expecting to have forecasts from the management, which is tricky. It's a tricky issue.
Yeah, just to be clear, we're not expecting management to provide forecasts. If they have forecasts in the market, then there may be value in asking management to comment on performance in the context of those forecasts. But management commentary is about providing the information for users to make judgments over the future performance of the entity, not for management to make those judgments themselves.
Feel relieved.
Good. we can't say that enough times, I suspect, in the practice statement. We'll still have people assuming that when we refer to future cash flows, we're talking about forecasts. We're not.
No, that's relevant, because if people think that way, they'll go against what you're proposing without knowing what you have in mind.
Okay, thank you. And Mark?
Thank you. To repeat something I said earlier, as an investor, I'm interested in the returns that is made on the capital that management are managing. And so when I look at this and you talk about the stewardship of economic resources, I'm seeing an alignment there in terms of thinking, I think. But I don't see the word returns anywhere. And I'm just wondering, given that investors, I don't think I'm alone in this, talk about returns, why there's not more emphasis on returns as one of the KPIs that we're looking at?
Yes, and I think this was something that came up last time. I think you raised. I think you know, the language we have in our conceptual framework is about future cash flows, which you know, ultimately equates to returns. I think it's easier for us to be more specific about returns is when we're asking the entity to describe its current performance. And at that point, you can start bringing in more detailed language about sort of returns and bringing in a sort of asset side to the story, financial asset side to the story, as well as a financial performance side to the story. Does that sort of make sense?
I'll think about it.
Okay.
Can I quickly... Something that nearly all investors are really curious about the company's strategy is not only their operating strategy, but also their strategy towards their capital structure and their distribution policy. And I kind of miss that now in the overview. I think it definitely needs a place. And it's typically something that investors also engage with companies. So the strategy on the capital structure of the company, which includes distribution of dividends, share buybacks, and maybe funding of equity or debt.
Okay, thank you. We'll think about that one, but it's certainly relevant somewhere.
So we've got 20 minutes, yes. And you've got two more sections.
I'm conscious of time, and that's been a really helpful discussion on objectives, which actually, if we get the objectives part right, that takes us a long way anyway. So I'll probably talk for 2 or 3 minutes on the other parts and then invite some sort of feedback on those parts as well. So materiality... this is often thought of as a problematic area in terms of narrative reporting. The reality is that materiality is defined in the context of relevance to user decision making, so it shouldn't really matter whether the information is narrative in nature, whether it's a customer number, or whether it's an earnings number. Materiality should still be applicable there. So we feel that needs emphasis because we're not sure whether that's always understood. And the second aspect of materiality is we have an added challenge, or we see an added challenge with management commentary, because we can't prescribe specific disclosures, we're reliant on management identifying the matters and the factors that are material to understanding the success of the business, and then providing the information that is material to understanding those matters and factors. So we have an approach here that goes down those two lines. So emphasising the core definition of materiality, and then asking management to think about matters separately, and then material information after that. So that's materiality. Then in terms of the other areas of principles, you'll see on page 35 of the pack, we cover something that we've in all honesty struggled to find the right word to describe it. I think in the pack it's described as narrative coherence, but what we're really describing is an approach that supports the completeness of a management commentary. So, and page 35 gives you a simple little flow chart of saying what's important to the business, what's the strategy for managing that issue, what's the performance information I need to understand the progress with that strategy and the impact of that strategy. So we're sort of trying to build up a story of completeness in that way that will work across the different content elements, because we define content elements in terms of risk, business model, strategies, performance, etc. But then we can also take a slightly more pragmatic view of completeness, and we can ask management to think about the internal information they use to manage the business themselves, the external factors that they're aware of, and, as I mentioned earlier, the information they're putting in their capital markets communications or planning to put in that probably has a place in the management commentary as well. So that's how we would proposing to approach completeness. Neutrality, obviously, is a very sensitive area in terms of management commentary. It's come up a couple of times already in our conversation. We can say a management commentary should be neutral, but that's a statement of the obvious. So we're looking to see how we can put more substance behind that. We've identified five factors in the pack on page 37 that ask management to consider the overall tone and content of the management commentary. So that's the sort of fair, balanced, understandable type of test. The prominence of information in the management commentary is all the bad stuff footnoted, is all the good stuff on page one. The selection of information, so recognising that management has judgments to make about which piece of information it should provide in order to give you an understanding over a particular issue. And the range of information it provides. So, for example, you see this in sort of oil exploration, where a range of up to X million barrels can get people quite excited, when actually, as a range itself, that might be misleading, and there's a sort of more narrow range. So thinking about the range that's been discussed in the management commentary and whether that range is likely to lead people to the right conclusion and right scope of assessment. And then lastly, in relation to neutrality, consistency, so just picking up on the risk of if, for whatever reason, you've changed the basis of presentation or basis of measurement of something, you need to think about what impact that has on the overall neutrality of the issue being presented, as well as whether you can justify making that specific change. And then lastly, we cover comparability, and again, three facets that we see as relevant for comparability. Is it comparable to the other information the entity uses? Is it comparable to the estimates and forecasts the entity has put out, if it's put any out? And is it on the same basis as common industry methodologies? Is it the same scope of information? So that's a very quick run-through of our approach to the other principles there. I think we've got a couple of questions which you might summarise for us.
If we start on materiality, do you agree that there, with the proposed distinction between matters that need to be addressed in the management commentary and then information on those matters? And are there any other considerations for materiality assessments? And then the questions on the other principles is essentially if you agree with the approaches we have outlined as Matt described, and if there's any principles we might be missing. So one principle which came up was verifiability, was mentioned a lot in the consultative group. Is there anything else which you think should be emphasized in the practice statement?
Okay, so we'll start with Mark.
Just answering that last question, consistency. We're looking at returns, numerator, denominator. It would be helpful if the numerator and denominator were consistent.
Yeah. And that's consistency between... it's not consistency over time there. You're talking about consistency of the numerator and the denominator with each other. Yeah. Very good point.
Marietta?
So three short comments on three different topics. The first is materiality. I do agree with your approach in principle, but I'm a bit worried about, you know, very hierarchical testing being used in practice, because ultimately any element of a business can sort of become material if something goes horribly wrong. So just to give you one example, you know, in the 20 years I've been covering pharma, Venezuela, the exchange rate was really just relevant for like 1 to 2 years. Before that, nobody cared because it was so small. But then it got so bad that, you know, it was actually visible in the numbers and management felt they had to explain. So I just want to make sure that, you know, the circle back can always be made and there's no sort of like whitelist where you're saying these are the relevant stuff, issues and anything else. We don't even test for materiality. The second thing is just on neutrality. I'm actually a little bit concerned about that, and I think it's something that you might want to discuss in a lot of detail with preparers. I don't know whether it's really always in the interest of shareholders for management to give a completely neutral commentary, because we just live in a world where positive spin is very, very normal. And you just don't want to sort of like create a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, for example, if they have to explain bad numbers, you know, it's very hard for management to say, well, you know, we're losing market share because a competitor has launched a much better product. You know, that's something that an analyst can say. But it's this sort of thing where, you know, I mean, you might, in 90% of the cases, you probably want them to be quite neutral. But there are probably a number of statements that they might need to make under total neutrality that you wouldn't really want them to make.
So this is the sort of, we might upset the balance of the coded language that gets used. Is that the sort of point you're getting at here?
Yeah, and it's not just coded language, but yeah, in a way. And I think, you know, also, you know, in the example I gave, you know, their competitors and their customers will pick up on this and say, okay, now even they admit that their product is no longer the best. Whereas, you know, a company, you would always expect them to point out the benefits of their product and let the customer figure out for themselves by talking to the competitors who has the better product. So I think there's like, you know, I mean, if neutrality basically means that management is writing something that sounds like an analyst report, you know, I don't think that would always be feasible necessarily. And my final point, just also a caveat or caution on comparability to industry metrics, because I think the preparers will throw that back at you and say, okay, so how are we supposed to know what, you know, the industry standard is? You know, we're part of that industry, so it's kind of becoming very circular, and we're really looking for guidance as to what you think we should put out. And they might then also come back and say, well, we want to tell our own story. So I think comparability and all of the other metrics that you mentioned, it's going to work, but sort of like, you know, is this how it's generally disclosed in the industry? You might get some pushback on that.
I think just maybe I misunderstood what you're saying on neutrality, Marietta, but I think it kind of, if we had genuinely neutral management statements, I think it would be a big step forward, frankly. I think we have way too much
positive bias and to get to a neutral position would be fantastic. So unless I misunderstood you, I'm not sure I fully agree that, yeah, they shouldn't be neutral. I think it would be a fantastic achievement to get them to be neutral and balanced. I think that would be good. I think on the materiality point, I'm not sure I fully understood or fully understand the staff's proposed approach that you've got on page 30. Are you kind of saying that this flowchart would be in the management commentary or be some kind of explanation of this flowchart? Because if I look back to the actual definition, which I think is really good on middle of page 28, that's a very clear conceptual definition. Are you saying this is one example of how you put it into practice, or how would it actually end up in the management commentary?
So yeah, the expectation of the management commentary would include material information. The question that we're seeking to address here is how do you provide some more guidance around what's material? And as a flowchart, is it a flowchart? It's not proposed that this would appear as a flowchart in the practice statement. It's just saying our approach would be based around helping people distinguish between material matters first, then the material information, and then clarifying the definition of material in the context of the future cash flows of the entity and users' assessment. So that's, perhaps we've misled you a bit with that flowchart.
More likely my misunderstanding, but yeah. I think materiality is always, not always, but sometimes feels like a bit of a fig leaf used by preparer to say it's really hard to decide what's material and what's not, and that's, you know, our view is that it's not, and we have a case for that. And I think if we keep it principles-based, I think it's harder for preparers to perhaps use that kind of fig leaf in reality. So I think that definition of materiality works well. I don't think we need to add to it or change it in any particular way, but that's just a personal view. Any other comments from... Gaurav?
Thank you. Some comments on materiality. I think that your approach on the materiality, that the distinction between the matters and the information is fine. But definition of materiality here used in the management commentary is basically that the same as the financial statements, right? I understand it correctly, that materiality is that the company specific aspects of relevance. Is that right? And also that I find that the IWASB is also talking about the so-called extended external report, which had a similar aspect of the management commentary. And I find that the IWASB is also talking about that the materiality of the information included in this type of disclosure from the auditor's perspective. Do you have any conversation with the IWASB?
Yes, a very pertinent point. So we have an IWASB member on our consultative group. Indeed, one of the comments that was made at the group was that by bringing the objectives and also the materiality of the management commentary closer to the conceptual framework and the reference to future cash flows, that actually was something that was potentially helpful to assurers because it provides more concrete framework to assess whether something should be in the management commentary or not.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else that you wanted to ask or say?
No, just thank you very much. That was very insightful. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Can I have a general question?
Yeah.
This is of course still high level. Is there also going to be a phase where the maybe one by one the IFRSs that are
that already are created and that maybe have disclosure requirements for the financial statements are revisited to see, okay, we have standard on goodwill, but maybe the financial statements are not a place to have a narrative on past acquisitions. But maybe the management commentary is a place to discuss past acquisitions. So you go one by one, maybe like what's the hedging policy of a company, what's the CapEx plan? I mean, is there going to be a phase in your project where the IFRSs are going to one by one revisit it to see whether there's a bifurcation in the management commentary?
So I think I probably better be a bit careful in suggesting that we're the solution to all the challenges on existing standards. However, I think, you know, for example, when we talk about current performance measures, we might cover things such as the separation of capital expenditure between maintenance spend and growth spend. So those sorts of aspects, I think, potentially. I think it's probably a bit ambitious for us to sort of try and work through each of the financial reporting standards with specific reference, in part because that would tilt the content of the practice statement much more to financial current year financial performance than is really intended. But it's a very interesting suggestion. It might be something that we sort of have a look at to see what would it mean in reality if we did this properly.
This won't really be
can I comment on that? So we don't have any plans to do a comprehensive review of the existing disclosures, disclosure requirements to see if any of them might belong more naturally in management commentary. I think there are two reasons why we won't do that. One, that would be a very big project and would delay the management commentary project unnecessarily, I think. And secondly, the standards are mandatory for people within the scope of the standards. The management commentary is just a practice statement, non-mandatory. So we'd be moving things from a mandatory home to a non-mandatory home. What I think is more likely is that if we have individual projects that are proceeding at the same time, the questions might come up about whether particular pieces of information belong more naturally in standards or management commentary. And a perfect example actually is disclosures about goodwill. And it's perfectly possible there that we might come across things where we say, actually, we think this thing might belong in management commentary. We won't put it into the standards governing disclosure on goodwill.
And I was going to make the same point as Peter. This is guidance, non-mandatory. Clearly, the disclosures are requirements. But also, we're looking for coherence between the front and back half as well, and that's part of the linkage that was telling the same story, or the story's backed up by what you see in the back half of the accounts. But yeah, it doesn't seem to be appropriate to go down that route at the moment.
Okay. Thank you very much for
Thank you. Thank you.